Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
I can't be picky. You know what I mean? I can't be picky. I just need opportunity. That's how I got here, off of one opportunity. So I just need an opportunity. I'm not picky. I want to be just around a great group of guys that I can learn from, be an organization that I can grow, and, add some more things to my toolbox for sure.
Former White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson is going to be looking for a new team. It is Chris Ronji filling in today, Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse. It is good to have you with us this morning. It's a short show. We are 29 minutes away right now from pregame. Ohio State-Michigan football is coming up right here on The Score. It is a massive, massive game. And guests on The Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Bruce?
The beat reporter for the Chicago White Sox for the Chicago Tribune, our friend Lamont Pope, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. And Lamont, first question out of the chute, have the White Sox come close to replacing shortstop Tim Anderson with some of the moves that they've made here in the last 10 days?
It's been one of the things that they've wanted to focus on, right? Once they decided to decline Tim's club option for 2024, that opened up a lot of possibilities for things that they needed. You know, one of the things that they really stressed was wanting to get better defensively overall, right? This is a team that I think finished 11th in the AL as far as errors. And so getting the situation where you add a Nicky Lopez, who only made two errors last season, you add a Paul DeJong, who was a Gold Glove finalist in, I think, 2019. And so you start making those sort of moves, and you sort of figure out, well, now you're in a position where you at least have a little more infield depth.
Lamond, looking at the White Sox from my perspective, it's first of all, and I think I'm sure you guys have talked about this a lot in my absence, but it is stunning to me how quickly this went from team in a championship window for years to come to where they are now on the appearance of a retool or rebuild or whatever you want to call it. So what are we calling it? Is this a rebuild for them, or are they serious about actually trying to compete in 2024?
Yeah, when we had a chance to talk to Chris Getz at the GM meetings, he mentioned that this is going to be a process, right? This is one thing where there's so many holes that this ball club had. Second base, shortstop, right field. You have to figure out what you're going to do behind the plate. Obviously, the rotation, three of the five guys that started at the beginning of last year are no longer here. The bullpen, obviously, a lot of those back end arms are no longer here. And so there's so many areas for this ball club to attack this offseason. Getting all of those spots filled this offseason, I think, would be almost an impossible ask. They do point out that this division obviously isn't the strongest division in all baseball, but it's a situation where this team has so many holes to fill. I think it'd be a tough ask to go ahead and
fulfill all those things and really be a true contender for 2024.
Well, my hope for the... Umman Pope of the Tribune joining us inside the clubhouse. He covers the Chicago White Sox for the Tribune. And Umman, when you look at the Dylan Cease situation, he's going to be among the top two or three hottest names as far as trades at the winter meetings when you and I show up there on December 3rd to begin those meetings. So you and I and the rest of the front office are sitting in a meeting with Chris Getz. So we'll let Ranji in the meeting too. Okay, and we're sitting in there and we're doing the plans on trading Cease or keeping him. 2 years of contract control at a very minimal amount of money for one of the top starting pitchers in the game. He can be a leader, a young leader for the young pitchers that you're bringing in if you hold on to him. He can also be something you can count on for victory day every 5 days when you pitch. Or he can bring you back two or three of someone else's top organization to play for the future. Knowing that it's Scott Boros, the agent, after 2 years, you don't give yourself a lot of chance to re-sign him. How does Umman Pope play it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation. You laid it out perfectly there, Bruce. It's one of those things where if you're going to make a move, now's the time to do it. The 2 years of controllable options there, for that's very attractive for a potential bidder. And so I think that his value on the trade market is at its highest right now. If you wait until the deadline, then it becomes a little less. And then if you wait until next year, it becomes a little less as well. And so I think if you're going to go ahead and make a move, now is the time to do it. And the possibility, take a look at sort of like, it's a little bit of a different situation because there were some non-tender sort of deadlines kind of involved with the Bummer deal. The fact that you were able to kind of get some sort of a big haul in that sort of situation. And one thing that Chris said with that trade was that, they were more than just a left-handed relief pitcher away from being a contender. And so you kind of take that sort of logic when you think about Dylan here. It's like, well, if 2024 is sort of that first step, and then where are you going to be at in 2025? And so are you in a situation where at the end of that year, Dylan will be a free agent? You're sort of weighing your options. So I think that if the timing right now to get it done, if the deal is going to get done, would be right now, because you're going to kind of get the most out of a return in that sort of situation.
Do they treat Luis Robert different in this situation?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we're talking about two guys who are pretty close in age, fairly similar in age. And if you're looking to be competitive, if not next year, the year after that, don't you? I almost feel like you need one or both of them to still be around. Otherwise, you are really starting over.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, I do look at that differently. I mean, I think Luis, his situation, what the club still has club options all the way out until 27. And so he's still kind of controllable, much more controllable from that standpoint. And one of the things, they've stressed wanting to get better defensively, and they've stressed wanting to be a very athletic ball club, right? And you take a look defensively, if you have center field locked down, you want to obviously be the strongest up the middle. And if you have center field already locked down, then that's a pretty good start. And obviously the speed aspect, just the overall tools that Luis has are really tough to replace. And so I think that's a different situation from Dylan's situation, just in the sense that you have so much more controllability with Luis, and you also have that option of kind of extending them out where if you start sort of building around him, then you kind of get in a position where you kind of contend again.
Umman, last year at this time, the Chicago White Sox hired Pedro Grifol to be their manager for what they felt was a championship-contending team. It turned out to be anything but that, and mostly the opposite. As a year later comes along, and you're looking at Pedro Grifol, you're now asking him to be a manager for a total rebuild team. What are your expectations? What should White Sox fans' expectations be of him now compared to when he was brought in to help them go and win a championship?
Yeah, I mean, you want to see those styles, you know, some of the things that they talked about as far as, like, the fundamentals, right? I mean, that's one of the things that's been really lacking with this ball club over the recent years. You want to see those strides. You want to see this ball club play good, clean baseball. You know, the wins, they may or may not come, but it's a situation of where you can kind of see where this progress is being made on the ball field day in and day out. And so those are the steps that you want to kind of see from a ball club. You know, how are they prepared? How are they looking from that standpoint? And then you kind of can grade from there. But yeah, I mean, it's a situation where it is a completely different operation from what Pedro walked on into. I mean, this was a club that everyone expected to kind of contend for the AL Central title this past season, and it was an absolute disaster of a year. And so now you have a little bit of a rebuild. Now you have a situation where you're kind of trying to look to see what tools you have, what ball club you have, what players you have, and it's this style of baseball that Pedro wants the team to play, you know, much more reliant on speed, much more reliant on their athleticism. If that can kind of translate to having some sort of success and some sort of day in and day out clean baseball that this ball club really needs to show.
Lamont Pope of the Chicago Tribune covers the White Sox, is with us on Inside the Clubhouse. And, you know, all of this stuff, talking about cleaning up the defense, and really this is stuff that, to me, is kind of on the margins. And you might be listening thinking, well, how can you say defense is on the margins? And I say it because the most important thing a team can do, I think, is be willing to extend themselves in free agency and be willing to spend money. That's the best way to get better. You also can and should and need to draft and develop well. You got to do those two things very, very well. Do we have any sense of if this team is looking to be good in the next couple of years and looking to compete in a division where teams don't really spend a whole lot of money? I mean, the Tigers might. But historically, teams in this division don't overextend themselves financially. Will the White Sox be willing to do that in the next couple of years? Because I think Sox fans look at the situation and they see that they have been willing to do it to a point, but then they stop short of where they need to be. Is there going to be a time where they blow past that point?
Boy, Chris, I mean, I think it's one of those situations where years, you know, obviously this year, I would say most of their moves are going to probably come via trades. You know, obviously there's going to be some signings, but, you know, nothing that's going to blow Sox fans out of the water, I would say. And then it kind of goes like, well, where's this ball club at in 2025? You know, what kind of position are they in? You know, where do they feel that this division's at? I think, you know, for the short term, I don't know if I see that happening. But then you kind of play it on out and see where this ball club is kind of down the line, and you can kind of go from there. I don't really see that sort of happening from that standpoint here in the short term.
Lamont, in closing with you, and Chris and I appreciate your time today. When you look at how the White Sox were run from a beat reporter's point of view and communication with Rick Hahn and with Ken Williams prior to Chris Getz, what differences do you see as a reporter and how you're able to do your job with Chris Getz now as the general manager?
I think that pretty much it's been pretty similar as far as, you know, whenever I had a question for Rick Hahn, you know, I would be able to get in touch with him. Whenever I've had a question for Chris, I've been able to get in touch with him. And so from an operational standpoint, you know, it's been pretty similar. But I think it's, you know, the one thing that they stressed when they made the decision to go in another direction was just having that one voice, you know, having that one person that you, as that person that you knew was making those decisions, making those calls. And so, you know, there hasn't been one of those situations where it's like, well, is this a Rick or Kenny kind of situation? It's been a thing where, you know, that with all these calls, it's been Chris. And so that's the one thing that, you know, there's a little bit more clarity from that standpoint.
Lamont Pope, a week from tomorrow morning. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Nah, that's okay, Bruce. I want you to do it.
It's all right.
Yeah, we're not in the same room, if you can't tell.
Why did you roll your eyes? Lamont, thank you so much. A week from tomorrow, I'll see you in the United Terminal as we head out to the winter meetings for Nashville, and what should be a pretty busy time for Mr. Getz and the Chicago White Sox. Thanks so much for taking some time out and putting up with Chris Ranji, whoa, just like I did. I appreciate it.
What in the world?
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right.
Hey, Bruce, this is a treat for you. What's been happening this morning? This is a
only
treat.
For another 12 minutes.
12 minutes. That's fine. Yeah, because we've got Ohio State and Michigan football coming up at the bottom of the hour. 10:30 is the pregame, and then 11 o'clock is the kick. So that's a. That's
did
a
you think
game.
I was going to go through a whole show without taking some shots at you?
No,
I mean,
man.
That's not what we do.
No, it's been so long.
I know it's always enjoyable because as much as we tease each other, we really hate each other's guts. No, I'm just kidding. We're good friends, and the last few minutes here, Chris, I'd like to talk about the Chicago Cubs and the Japanese pitching market. Mm-hmm. Right-handed pitcher named Yamamoto is going to be the highest paid Japanese pitcher in Major League history by the time the winter meetings end. There are 10 teams out there that are bidding for his services. He has won the Sawamura Award, which is comparable to the Cy Young Award here in the United States. The Sawamura Award in Japan is the Cy Young Award. He's won that three times in a row in Japan. He had an ERA this year of 1.41, collectively over the last 3 years of about 1.22. They're saying pretty much that he's a top of the rotation one or two guy, even at the major league level. Your thoughts about him and the Chicago Cubs or other markets right now?
Well, I think he would be, again, it's always difficult to tell how that's going to translate if you get to the major leagues. But there is a long list of Japanese pitchers that have come in and have had pretty good success right away. I can't imagine he would be any different. It might take him a little bit of time to become a true ace at the MLB level, but I would be surprised if he doesn't come in to this league and is pretty good right away. Like I said, may not be a number one. I suppose he could be a number one for a lot of different teams, but he may not be that true ace type because a lot of people talk about his stuff and how ridiculous it is and the curveball. And I know it gets compared to Clayton Kershaw's curveball just because of the break. And I don't know if it will be as effective in the major leagues, but it could be really effective. I think he's going to probably rely on that slider a lot to get swings and misses, to get strikeouts when he gets here. I think he's going to be good, you know, and it's difficult to tell. You don't know for sure until they actually get here, but if he's missing bats, which I expect him to do it, and they'll probably work with him on that too, there's no reason he can't contribute right away. And I think that if they do it, they're going to have to put up the posting fee, so that's going to increase, you know, their overall financial commitment. So it's going to be a lot of money. I don't think it would be money poorly spent if they're able to do that. It would be good for them. You know, you get a couple of names in here. You get him. Maybe you get Shohei Ohtani, who, again, a lot of people think the Dodgers are the number one destination for him. There are other suitors beyond the Cubs, the Braves being one of them. I mentioned the Red Sox earlier. So there are other teams that have some interest in Shohei Ohtani. But if you're able to do that, that is an unbelievable offseason for the Cubs. If you get both of those guys. I mean, hell, if you get one of them, it's a good offseason.
Well, you know, one might bring the other as you're talking.
It's possible.
About. We talked about being proactive on both. Why not at this point? Yamamoto is compared to Tanaka, who pitched for the Yankees so well for 6 years and made the most money up to this point. I think it was about $144 million contract for 7 years at that time. So With that in mind, they're talking 7-8 years at $30 million. So you're hoping that he's very good from the beginning. The only worry that some people have is the fact that he's not a big guy. But
he's 5'10", right?
Yeah. But, you know, Pedro Martinez comes to mind. Wasn't a very big guy. Won a couple hundred games. Won some, like, 4 Cy Youngs, I believe. So I'm not worried about a guy that throws 98 with a nasty splitter and 3 other pitches that are not very hittable. I'm hoping the Chicago Cubs are in on that as well. And I think they, from all indications that from what I've talked to other people about, they are. Jed Hoyer in July went over to Japan to see some of these Japanese pitchers that are going to be available here in free agency after they post. And Yamamoto is certainly someone that they are looking at.
Let me say this big picture-wise, Bruce. The Cubs have an opportunity here, and I know the Reds have improved. They've gotten better, and they probably will get incrementally better here. The Brewers are, you know, they kind of hang around. But the Cubs are the one team in the division that has the ability to financially commit unlike the others. I would expect the Cardinals, and I'm in St. Louis right now, and I'm working for the Cardinals flagship station. I will tell you right now that I am still extremely skeptical, even after the signing of Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, which are innings-eating pitchers. I'm extremely skeptical they're going to be competitive next year. I just am. They might be. I'm sure things can break their way. But the Cubs have a real opportunity here. If they financially commit to players like we've been talking about today, to not just be competitive in the division, but to kind of own the division for the next several years. They got a real opportunity here. The days of St. Louis just sort of managing to always be at the top of the division, you know, even you look at the roster and wonder, how is this team doing this? I think those days are gone. It's possible they come back sometime soon, but I think it's going to be a while. I think they're going to struggle to get back to being competitive, despite the fact they have Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado in the or on their roster. Those guys are getting older. You know, this is, I think it's going to be more difficult for the Cardinals than a lot of other people believe.
Well, with the Brewer situation with Woodruff and Burns, you know, one's not going to pitch, the other is going to be probably traded. I agree with you that the Brewers might be looking at some tougher times. I don't discount the fact they have a very good farm system, a very good system altogether, and regardless of whether they have counsel there or not, there's still someone you can't ignore. But I believe Cincinnati and the Cubs, it's their time in the division right now.
Yeah.
Cincinnati has built up a really strong farm system. They probably will spend a little bit money here in the offseason, too, to augment all that. I'm not one of those people, Chris, that believes that free agency is the way to winning championships. However, when you can get teams...
Texas Rangers.
It didn't work out very much in that first year, did it?
Did this year.
did this year, but they had to go and spend more. Even a couple hundred million dollars in a pitcher that didn't even pitch, okay, the entire season. So with that in mind, we'll keep talking about this and Inside the Clubhouse, but Ohio State and Michigan are next. We have people to thank, Chris, including you for stepping in here. Sean Sears, great job producing the show as well today. We thank you, our great baseball fans. We'll be back 9 to 11 next week. People can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Lamon Pope, Pat Hughes, thank you so much. Chris, enjoy St. Louis. Thank you for stepping in. Ohio State and Michigan next on The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
I can't be picky. You know what I mean? I can't be picky. I just need opportunity. That's how I got here, off of one opportunity. So I just need an opportunity. I'm not picky. I want to be just around a great group of guys that I can learn from, be an organization that I can grow, and add some more things to my toolbox for sure.
Former White Sox shortstop Tim Anderson is going to be looking for a new team. It is Chris Ronji filling in today. Bruce Levine on Inside the Clubhouse. It is good to have you with us this morning. It's a short show. We are 29 minutes away right now from pregame. Ohio State-Michigan football is coming up right here on The Score. It is a massive, massive game. And guests on The Score hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Bruce?
The beat reporter for the Chicago White Sox for the Chicago Tribune, our friend Lamont Pope, nice enough to take some time out on a Saturday morning to join us on Inside the Clubhouse. And Lamont, first question out of the chute, have the White Sox come close to replacing shortstop Tim Anderson with some of the moves that they've made here in the last 10 days?
It's been one of these things that they've wanted to focus on, right? Once they decided to decline Tim's club option for 2024, that opened up a lot of possibilities for things that they needed. You know, one of the things that they really stressed was wanting to get better defensively overall, right? This is a team that I think finished 11th in the AL as far as errors. And so getting the situation where you add a Nicky Lopez, who only made two errors last season, you add a Paul DeJong, who was a Gold Glove finalist in, I think, 2019. And so you start making those sort of moves, and you sort of figure out, well, now you're in a position where you at least have a little more infield depth.
Lamond, looking at the White Sox from my perspective, it's first of all, and I think I'm sure you guys have talked about this a lot in my absence, but it is stunning to me how quickly this went from team in a championship window for years to come to where they are now on the appearance of a retool or rebuild or whatever you want to call it. So what are we calling it? Is this a rebuild for them, or are they serious about actually trying to compete in 2024?
Yeah, when we had a chance to talk to Chris Getz at the GM meetings, he mentioned that this is going to be a process, right? This is one thing where there's so many holes that this ball club had. Second base, shortstop, right field. You have to figure out what you're going to do behind the plate. Obviously, the rotation, three of the five guys that started at the beginning of last year are no longer here. The bullpen, obviously, a lot of those back end arms are no longer here. And so there's so many areas for this ball club to attack this offseason. Getting all of those spots filled this offseason, I think, would be almost an impossible ask. They do point out that this division obviously isn't the strongest division in all baseball, but it's a situation where this team has so many holes to fill. I think it'd be a tough ask to go ahead and fulfill all those things and really be a true contender for 2024.
Lamont Pope of the Tribune joining us inside the clubhouse. He covers the Chicago White Sox for the Tribune. And Lamont, when you look at the Dylan Cease situation. He's going to be among the top two or three hottest names as far as trades at the winter meetings when you and I show up there on December 3rd to begin those meetings. So you and I are, and the rest of the front office are sitting in a meeting with Chris Getz, and we'll let Ranji in the meeting too. Okay, and we're sitting in there, and we're doing the plans on trading Cease or keeping him. 2 years of contract control at a very minimal amount of money for one of the top starting pitchers in the game. He can be a leader, a young leader for the young pitchers that you're bringing in if you hold on to him. He can also be something you can count on for victory day every 5 days when you pitch. Or he can bring you back two or three of someone else's top organization to play for the future. Knowing that it's Scott Boros, the agent, after 2 years, you don't give yourself a lot of chance to re-sign him. How does Lamont Pope play it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a situation. You laid it out perfectly there, Bruce. It's one of those things where if you're going to make a move, now's the time to do it. The 2 years of controllable options there, for that's very attractive for a potential bidder. And so I think that his value on the trade market is at its highest right now. If you wait until the deadline, then it becomes a little less. And then if you wait until next year, it becomes a little less as well. And so I think if you're going to go ahead and make a move, now is the time to do it. And the possibility, take a look at sort of like, it's a little bit of a different situation because there were some non-tender sort of deadlines kind of involved with the Bummer deal. The fact that you were able to kind of get some sort of a big haul in that sort of situation. And one thing that Chris said with that trade was that, they were more than just a left-handed relief pitcher away from being a contender. And so you kind of take that sort of logic when you think about Dylan here. It's like, well, if 2024 is sort of that first step, and then where are you going to be at in 2025? And so are you in a situation where at the end of that year, Dylan will be a free agent? You're sort of weighing your options. So I think that if the timing right now to get it done, if the deal is going to get done, would be right now, because you're going to kind of get the most out of a return in that sort of situation.
Do they treat Luis Robert different in this situation? Yeah. Because we're talking about two guys who are pretty close in age, fairly similar in age. And if you're looking to be competitive, if not next year, the year after that, I almost feel like you need one or both of them to still be around. Otherwise, you are really starting over.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, I do look at that differently. I mean, I think Luis, his situation, what the club still has club options all the way out until 27. And so he's still kind of controllable, much more controllable from that standpoint. And one of the things, they've stressed wanting to get better defensively, and they've stressed wanting to be a very athletic ball club, right? And you take a look defensively, if you have center field locked down, you want to obviously be the strongest up the middle. And if you have center field already locked down, then that's a pretty good start. And obviously the speed aspect, just the overall tools that Luis has are really tough to replace. And so I think that's a different situation from Dylan's situation, just in the sense that you have so much more controllability with Luis, and you also have that option of kind of extending them out where if you start sort of building around him, then you kind of get in a position where you kind of contend again.
Lamont, last year at this time, the Chicago White Sox hired Pedro Grifol to be their manager for what they felt was a championship-contending team. It turned out to be anything but that, and mostly the opposite. As a year later comes along, and you're looking at Pedro Grifol, you're now asking him to be a manager for a total rebuild team. What are your expectations? What should White Sox fans' expectations be of him now compared to when he was brought in to help them go and win a championship?
Yeah, I mean, you want to see those styles, some of the things that they talked about as far as like the fundamentals, right? I mean, that's one of the things that's been really lacking with this ball club over the recent years. You want to see those strides. You want to see this ball club play good, clean baseball. The wins They may or may not come, but it's a situation of where you can kind of see where this progress is being made on the ball field day in and day out. And so those are the steps that you want to kind of see. From a ball club, you know, how are they prepared? How are they looking from that standpoint? And then you kind of can grade from there. But, yeah, I mean, it's a situation where it is a completely different operation from what Pedro walked on into. I mean, this was a club that everyone expected to kind of contend for the AL Central title this past season, and it was an absolute disaster of a year. And so now you have a little bit of a rebuild. Now you have a situation where you're kind of trying to look to see what tools you have, what ball club you have, what players you have, and if this style of baseball that Pedro wants the team to play, you know, much more reliant on speed, much more reliant on their athleticism, if that can kind of translate to having some sort of success and some sort of day in and day out clean baseball that this ball club really needs to show.
Lamont Pope of the Chicago Tribune covers the White Sox, is with us on Inside the Clubhouse. And, you know, all of this stuff, talking about cleaning up the defense, and really this is stuff that, to me, is kind of on the margins. And you might be listening thinking, well, how can you say defense is on the margins? And I say it because the most important thing a team can do, I think, is be willing to extend themselves in free agency and be willing to spend money. That's the best way to get better. You also can and should and need to draft and develop well. You got to do those two things very, very well. Do we have any sense of if this team is looking to be good in the next couple of years and looking to compete in a division where teams don't really spend a whole lot of money? I mean, the Tigers might. But historically, teams in this division don't overextend themselves financially. Will the White Sox be willing to do that in the next couple of years? Because I think Sox fans look at the situation and they see that they have been willing to do it to a point, but then they stop short of where they need to be. Is there going to be a time where they blow past that point?
Boy, Chris, I mean, I think it's one of those situations where years, you know, obviously this year, I would say most of their moves are going to probably come via trades. You know, obviously there's going to be some signings, but, you know, nothing that's going to blow Sox fans out of the water, I would say. And then it kind of goes like, well, where's this ball club at in 2025? You know, what kind of position are they in? You know, where do they feel that this division's at? I think, you know, for the short term, I don't know if I see that happening. But then you kind of play it on out and see where this ball club is kind of down the line, and you can kind of go from there. I don't really see that sort of happening from that standpoint here in the short term.
Lamont, in closing with you, and Chris and I appreciate your time today. When you look at how the White Sox were run from a beat reporter's point of view and communication with Rick Hahn and with Ken Williams prior to Chris Getz, what differences do you see as a reporter and how you're able to do your job with Chris Getz now as the general manager?
I think that pretty much it's been pretty similar as far as, you know, whenever, you know, I've had a question, whenever I had a question for Rick Hahn, you know, I would be able to get in touch with him. Whenever I've had a question for Chris, I've been able to get in touch with him. And so from an operational standpoint, you know, it's been pretty similar, but I think it's, you know, the one thing that they stressed, when they made the decision to go in another direction was just having that one voice, you know, having that one person that you, as that person that you knew was making those decisions, making those calls. And so, you know, there hasn't been one of those situations where it's like, well, is this a Rick or Kenny kind of situation? Or it's been a thing where, you know, that with all these calls, it's been Chris. And so that's the one thing that, you know, there's a little bit more clarity from that standpoint.
Lamont Pope, a week from tomorrow morning. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
Nah, that's okay, Bruce. I want you to do it.
It's all right.
Yeah, we're not in the same room if you can't tell.
Why did you roll your eyes? Lamont, thank you so much. A week from tomorrow, I'll see you at the United Terminal as we head out to the winter meetings for Nashville, which should be a pretty busy time for Mr. Getz and the Chicago White Sox. Thanks so much for taking some time out in putting up with Chris Ranji, just like I did. I appreciate it.
What in the world?
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
All right.
Hey, Bruce, this is a treat for you. What's been happening this morning? This is a
only
treat.
For another 12 minutes.
12 minutes. That's fine. Yeah, because we've got Ohio State and Michigan football coming up at the bottom of the hour. 10:30 is the pregame, and then 11 o'clock is the kick. So it's a
Did you think
game.
I was going to go through a whole show without taking some shots at you?
No,
I mean,
man.
That's not what we do.
No, it's been so long.
I know. It's always enjoyable because as much as we tease each other, we really hate each other's guts. No, I'm just kidding. We're good friends, and the last few minutes here, Chris, I'd like to talk about the Chicago Cubs and the Japanese pitching market. Mm-hmm. Right-handed pitcher named Yamamoto is going to be the highest-paid Japanese pitcher in Major League history by the time the winter meetings end. There are 10 teams out there that are bidding for his services. He has won the Sawamura Award, which is comparable to the Cy Young Award here in the United States. The Sawamura Award in Japan is the Cy Young Award. He's won that three times in a row in Japan. He had an ERA this year of 1.41, collectively over the last 3 years of about 1.22. They're saying pretty much that he's a top of the rotation one or two guy, even at the major league level. Your thoughts about him and the Chicago Cubs or other markets right now?
Well, I think he would be, again, it's always difficult to tell how that's going to translate if you get to the major leagues. But there is a long list of Japanese pitchers that have come in and have had pretty good success right away. I can't imagine he would be any different. It might take him a little bit of time to become a true ace at the MLB level, but I would be surprised if he doesn't come in to this league and is pretty good right away. Like I said, may not be a number one. I suppose he could be a number one for a lot of different teams, but he may not be that true ace type, because a lot of people talk about his stuff and how ridiculous it is and the curveball. And I know it gets compared to Clayton Kershaw's curveball just because of the break. And I don't know if it will be as effective in the major leagues, but it could be really effective. I think he's going to probably rely on that slider a lot to get swings and misses, to get strikeouts when he gets here. I think he's going to be good, you know, and again, it's difficult to tell. You don't know for sure until they actually get here. But if he's missing bats, which I expect him to do it, and they'll probably work with him on that too, there's no reason he can't contribute right away. And I think that if they do it, they're going to have to put up the posting fee. So that's going to increase, you know, their overall financial commitment. So it's going to be a lot of money. I don't think it would be money poorly spent if they're able to do that. It would be good for them. You know, you get a couple of names in here. You get him. Maybe you get Shohei Ohtani, who, again, a lot of people think the Dodgers are the number one destination for him. There are other suitors beyond the Cubs, the Braves being one of them. I mentioned the Red Sox earlier. So there are other teams that have some interest in Shohei Ohtani. But if you're able to do that, that is an unbelievable offseason for the Cubs. If you get both of those guys. I mean, hell, if you get one of them, it's a good offseason.
Well, you know, one might bring the other as you're talking.
It's possible.
About. We talked about being proactive on both. Why not at this point? Yamamoto is compared to Tanaka, who pitched for the Yankees so well for 6 years and made the most money up to this point. I think it was about $144 million contract for 7 years at that time. So with that in mind, they're talking 7-8 years at $30 million. So you're hoping that he's very good from the beginning. The only worry that some people have is the fact that he's not a big guy. But
he's 5'10", right?
Yeah, but, you know, Pedro Martinez comes to mind, wasn't a very big guy, won a couple hundred games, won some like four Cy Youngs, I believe. So I'm not worried about a guy that throws 98 with a nasty splitter and three other pitches that are not very hittable. I'm hoping the Chicago Cubs are in on that as well. And I think they, from all indications that from what I've talked to other people about, they are. Jed Hoyer in July went over to Japan to see some of these Japanese pitchers that are going to be available here in free agency after they post. And Yamamoto is certainly someone that they are looking at.
Let me say this big picture-wise, Bruce. The Cubs have an opportunity here, and I know the Reds have improved. They've gotten better, and they probably will get incrementally better here. The Brewers are, you know, they kind of hang around. But the Cubs are the one team in the division that has the ability to financially commit unlike the others. I would expect the Cardinals, and I'm in St. Louis right now, and I'm working for the Cardinals flagship station. I will tell you right now that I am still extremely skeptical, even after the signing of Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, which are innings-eating pitchers. I'm extremely skeptical they're going to be competitive next year. I just am. They might be. I'm sure things can break their way. But the Cubs have a real opportunity here. If they financially commit to players like we've been talking about today to not just be competitive in the division, but to kind of own the division for the next several years. They got a real opportunity here. The days of St. Louis just sort of managing to always be at the top of the division, you know, even you look at the roster and wonder, how is this team doing this? I think those days are gone. It's possible they come back sometime soon, but I think it's going to be a while. I think they're going to struggle to get back to being competitive, despite the fact they have Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado in the or on their roster. Those guys are getting older. You know, this is, I think it's going to be more difficult for the Cardinals than a lot of other people believe.
Well, with the Brewers situation with Woodruff and Burns, you know, one's not going to pitch, the other is going to be probably traded. I agree with you that the Brewers might be looking at some tougher times. I don't discount the fact they have a very good farm system, a very good system altogether, and regardless of whether they have counsel there or not, there's still someone you can't ignore. But I believe Cincinnati and the Cubs, it's their time in the division right now. Yeah. Cincinnati has built up a really strong farm system. They probably will spend a little bit money here in the offseason, too, to augment all that. I'm not one of those people, Chris, that believes that free agency is the way to winning championships. However, when you can get teams...
Texas Rangers.
It didn't work out very much in that first year, did it?
Did this year.
did this year, but they had to go and spend more. Even a couple hundred million dollars in a pitcher that didn't even pitch, okay, the entire season. So with that in mind, we'll keep talking about this and Inside the Clubhouse, but Ohio State and Michigan are next. We have people to thank, Chris, including you for stepping in here. Sean Sears, great job producing the show as well today. We thank you, our great baseball fans. We'll be back 9 to 11 next week. People can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Lamon Pope, Pat Hughes, thank you so much. Chris, enjoy St. Louis. Thank you for stepping in. Ohio State and Michigan next on The Score.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Nancy Cartwright. You may know me better as the voice of Bart Simpson.
On Simpsons Declassified, we're diving into the mysteries that keep the Simpsons forever young. Have you ever wondered how the Simpsons regularly predicts future events? Who better to ask than the show's creators, performers, and writers? The celebrity guests. Be sure to follow and listen to Simpsons Declassified wherever you get your podcasts.